Yeah. Uh-huh. Listen up. Yeah. I can see you're new to this. You ain't got no job. You ain't got no experience. You're entry level. You ain't got no qualifications, baby. You're entry level. Your entry level. Your entry level, baby. Your entry level. Ooh, yeah.
Welcome to this week's episode of Entry Level. I'm at her house. She's my girlfriend. Her name is Summer Sakula. How are you, Summer?
Hi, I'm great.
Summer, do you like the show Jeopardy?
Sure.
Well, our guest this week won a bunch of episodes.
Really?
Yeah. You didn't know that? Andy. So we hung out with Andy Wood, who is the final member of Probably Science, the original podcast that I was part of 10 years ago. We just recorded our 10-year anniversary. He won a bunch of episodes of Jeopardy not that long ago.
Huh. That's very cool.
Yeah. We stayed at his house. Yeah. You were hanging out with a genius. You didn't even know it last night. We stayed at his house in Joshua Tree a few weeks ago. Great friend. Excited. Going to interview him tomorrow. It's going to be fun. We made pizzas. How'd you feel about your pizza?
Fail.
Me too. A couple of fails on our pizzas. Our new thing that we both love, Station 11.
Mm-hmm.
Listeners, if you have listener mail about Station 11, we'd love to hear it. when I visited Denver, I bought Summer a Station 11-esque jacket because I thought Kirsten would wear it. And you've been wearing it.
Yeah. You got to be ready for anything.
Ready for anything.
Yeah.
In my joke that no one likes that I've been doing about Station 11, which pause this if you haven't seen it yet, watched all 10 hours, hit play. I'll give you a minute. So now that you've just seen all of Station 11, only dorks survive. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doomsday preppers.
Mm-hmm.
Not one. There's not one doomsday prepper that survives.
No, none of the like militia types.
Yeah, which is very exciting.
Yeah, just mostly fun, nice people.
Bunch of dorks. Yeah. Bunch of nerds.
Yeah.
This is not giving. This all happens by episode 2. We're Station 11 heads. Okay, so.
Wait, you had some. I know this isn't job related, but you had some pretty weird shows in Denver.
Yeah, well, the Denver shows were great. Summer can attest, I had kind of a slight mental breakdown. The TV show I'm working on for Fox, shout out, greatest network in the world. I had a break, thought I had a break. I was like, I'm going to go to Denver because I didn't have time to camp.
Mm-hmm.
It's too cold to camp. So I'm like, I got to go do stand-up comedy. That centers me. Mm-hmm. Currently in Los Angeles, there's not a lot of stand-up comedy because mm-hmm. of, a global pandemic.
Yeah.
Which compared to Station 11, not really a pandemic, but unimportant. So I was like, I'm going to go to Denver. I'm going to do shows. I did the Grolic show. It was very fun. Made me love comedy. Got me out of my head. I loved it.
People were concerned for your safety.
Yeah. I took a ladder on stage and sat on it. It was fine. It was very fun. I enjoyed it. It was back to when you do stand up. Currently there's a comedy war happening on Twitter somewhere. I don't know if you know this.
I didn't.
There is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's people saying like what a comedian is, and a comedian's job isn't to do this, and it's to do this, and it's to do this. And it's just like, get the fuck out. Everybody's being crazy. Your job is to be funny and get the fuck off stage.
Yeah.
Go up, be funny. And if you can make a point, oh my God, you're the best one ever. Peace out.
Yeah.
Good comedian. So I was going up, I was doing goofs and it was really fun. I don't even know where I was going with that. Where was I going with that? I have no idea. Just that there's a comedy war on Twitter currently and I'm trying to stay out of it.
Hmm.
Not so successfully. I guess what I mean to say is the only good comedy in the world is Jackass. Do you agree?
Yeah, sure.
We saw Jackass 4.
Yeah.
Opening night.
Yeah.
It was so fun.
It was so fun. Everybody was ready to have fun.
Everyone had a great time.
Cornell Reed.
Cornell Reed had got Cornell Reed got the laugh of the theater.
Yeah,
he gave a standing ovation to the Sonic the Hedgehog 2
trailer,
and everyone howled. And that's it. That's it. You want to talk about a tough audience? Mm-hmm. Jackass 4, 38-year-old dudes and their wives who are mad they're there. That's a tough crowd.
What did he say? He said, he's like, I could feel the audience wanted to erupt, and I gave them what they wanted. Something like that. It was very funny.
Whatever he did was incredible. It was the best. He's timed the funniest.
Perfectly.
So I went to Denver. I hung out. Got my head on straight. I'm back now. I'm back in Los Angeles. Trying hard on this podcast again. We're going to start getting more new guests, unless my show gets picked up, in which case we're gonna interview everybody again, because it's hard to book this motherfucker. But I had a theory that I realized it's not a theory, it's a fact, on why people in big cities look down on people from smaller towns who like chain restaurants. Okay, because I love chain restaurants. You know this about me.
Yes,
I love them. I think they're great. Chili's rules. Applebee's rocks. Red Lobster, incredible. TGI Fridays, awesome. These are all great places. And that's like part of the reason that the show I am making. I'm like, I hate how these places get made fun of because they're great.
Yep.
And but you're from like Southern California. And they're not as good around here. Like people around here are like, ugh, you like Red Lobster? I'm like, yeah, unironically, it's great. And I realized why. It's because in places in big cities, New York, Los Angeles, Seattle, you have other options, right? So like, and you worked in the service industry. And those are the better jobs. Like not like in New York City, you don't want to work at the Applebee's in Times Square.
Well, I get maybe it's just think about it. It's like in an ideal world, you make 20%. So wherever.
And Applebee's is reasonably priced. If you live in Iowa, but if you live in New York City, it's not very expensive at all.
Right. But like
that menu, the prices don't change New York to Iowa.
Jesus. That's crazy.
Right. So then that's why you get treated right in Iowa.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if you have a crazy turnover because you're in Times Square, it would make sense. But like generally, if you're working at a lower priced restaurant, you're taking home less money. So
you care less.
The job is less desirable. So you potentially care less.
Right. Yeah. So what I realize is the reason I love Red Lobster is because I've been going to the Cedar Rapids, Iowa Red Lobster, where that's the king shit, right? That's the best restaurant job you can get. I mean, I'm saying that loosely. That's a top 10% restaurant job you can get in Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
Yeah.
Red Lobster.
Yeah.
So you go there, you're wined and dined. You're treated like a king. Yeah, the food's hot. Everyone's smiling. You go to Red Lobster in Los Angeles, it's 50%. You know, it's like, it's not the best restaurant you could go to out here. It's still in, and I'll tell you what, the food suffers and the service suffers. And that's why the people out here are like, oh my God, you like Red Lobster? You must be a piece of shit. No, I just go to the good Red Lobster where people care and people like have smiles because they actually take pride in their job, because a Red Lobster in the Midwest is cool. It's exciting. A Red Lobster in LA, oh, you think you're better than it? Maybe you are. But guess what? I still love it. And then when I go to the ones in LA, it disappoints me. And I guess all I'm saying is I went to a fucking Buffalo Wild Wings when I was in Fort Collins and it blew my socks off. It's what I remembered. Because I had gone and it hurt, Summer. It hurt what the Buffalo Wild Wings in Burbank, California did to me. After a hard day at work, I wanted to go and I wanted to enjoy six wings, just six wings. I'm trying to watch my figure.
Reasonable.
Six Asian Zing wings and a beer. It took like 45 minutes and I had to flag people down.
Oh my God.
It was really sad. And I'm like, this is the middle of Omicron at this time. I'm like risking my life for these fucking wings. And I was like, am I trash? I really thought, am I trash? And then I went to a Fort Collins Buffalo Wild Wings. and it was incredible. And I'm not trash, and I am right. Buffalo Wild Wings is a fantastic restaurant. You just got to know where to go, and that's not big cities. So that's why big cities think they're above these chain restaurants, and they're not.
Makes sense.
Okay, cool. I just, you know, needed to get my manifesto out of the way. Speaking of trying with the podcast again.
Your fast food manifesto.
That's not fast food. It's a chain restaurant.
Is there
a fucking difference between Buffalo Wild Wings and Wendy's? What are you? Yes, there's a big difference.
Okay. Sorry.
Wow, that sounded like I snapped. You don't think there's a difference between Wendy's and Buffalo Wild Wings?
No, there is. There is.
One's a chain restaurant, one's fast food.
Okay.
I feel like I just was, sounds like I snapped at you.
No. She said like this like deadly serious.
Because like to me, like I'm like fast food is you can get it in a drive thru.
Mm-hmm. Is there like an in between though? Like
no, like
is Buffalo Wild Wings fast food?
No.
I've never been to one, so I don't
know. Oh my gosh, because you've never been to Fort Collins. No, Buffalo Wild Wings is a sit down. It's Buffalo Wild Wings, would you call Applebee's fast food? You are such a rich kid. This is so upsetting. No, those are treats. Those are treats. You get good grades. You go to Applebee's. You sit down.
No, I'm not saying it's like fast food. Like it's bad. But I think there's like probably like a automation.
Yeah, for sure. No, yeah. They're not good for you.
Right.
It's like, not healthy.
I think they've made efficiency an extremely important.
Of course, part yes, of but like model. A fast food is like, do I eat this in my car driving?
Okay.
I guess is what I would put it down to.
Okay.
I would never eat Chili's in my car driving. I think that's what it is. Okay, so we figured it out together. Fast food, the difference between fast food and chain restaurant is, can you eat it while doing 85 down the highway? That if you can eat it doing 85 down the highway, and it's ribs, Chili's is fast food to you.
There you go.
Congratulations, you're a psychopath. But I can't. So, no, these are chain restaurants versus fast food restaurants.
I mean, wasn't that the origins of, like, fast foods? It's, like, with the start of, like, automobile culture? Is that, I don't know.
Well,
we gotta do some research.
Well, no, we'll just watch The Food That Built America, which is a great podcast that the History Channel does, is that they just do terrible reenactments to that makes it even more fun. Okay. Yeah, like, the whole reason behind McDonald's working... Mm-hmm. Because they used to do car service, but it was like car service. It was like Chili's car service, and it would take forever because it's like, do you want ribs? Do you want mashed potatoes? Yeah, yeah. Do you want fucking, I don't know, like Brussels sprouts? And then the McDonald's brothers, I don't know if they're the first ones to do it, the first ones to like automize it, were like, no, we do three things. We do them perfect. Mm-hmm. What do you want? We're going to knock it out really quick, and yeah, they're going to be good, which is why In-N-Out is still good. They stuck with the original McDonald's ideology. Mm-hmm. They're like, we do fucking five things.
Yeah.
In-N-Out is the only fast food place you still will eat.
Yeah.
And it's incredible.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah.
It's road trip food.
Limited options. Yeah. I mean, and I think, like, obviously it depends where you are on the road. Like, I've been to plenty of Cracker Barrels all over this great nation.
That's a chain restaurant.
Yeah.
It's a delicious chain restaurant. You get to play the pegboard game.
I don't know what that is.
Doesn't sound like you've been to many Cracker Barrels then.
I guess not.
Where you jump your pegs over other pegs. I'll take you to Cracker Barrel. I'll take you on a nice treat. Okay. I said this would be a short intro, and it is. We're dragging on, but it's exciting.
Sure.
We're learning things. Mm-hmm. What's the difference between fast food and chain restaurants? Mm-hmm. Email in entrylevelwithbrooksmeelan@gmail.com. with a chain restaurant you think might be fast food or fast food that you might think might be a chain restaurant. And then we have, so this all stemmed from a listener mail, which I got back into the listener mail because I didn't have to work this week, and you guys crushed it. Email entrylevelwithbrooksmeelan@gmail.com with any stories about working in restaurants, or I don't know, whatever you guys want to talk about, whatever you want me to have to ruminate and then make Summer listen to while I pace around her kitchen, which was, you know, this one just made me be like, this is why people don't care. This is why people think Red Lobster stinks. It doesn't stink. It just stinks in certain areas. It's from Cord. He says, hey, man, big fan. In college, I live pretty much rent-free at my dad's, at my friend's dad's house. It's always fun when you live at your friend's dad's house. It was two of them, me, and two other friends. So it was a dad, his son, and four of his buddies. I appreciate this living situation. Sounds pretty rock and roll. His dad was only charging us $135 a month. That's crazy, which is completely insane because it was in the city. And I'm guessing the city is New York City. Not quite sure what he did for a living. And the son just said he sold drugs to, and then he gives me a famous person. And I will say, I will not say who the famous person was who bought these drugs because it doesn't sound like this person was bad. It sounds like they just procured something from somebody else. If you have stories of selling drugs to a famous person and that person ripped you off or was mean, I will tell, I will say their name because this podcast, we'll rat on people. We will say, if you're a bad tipper, we say it. Summer, I don't know if you've listened to all these podcasts, but if you're a famous person, you've tipped poorly, I'll say your name on this podcast.
Ooh, that's very fun.
It's great. Yeah.
What were you going to say?
Well, the worst tipper of all time, you told me. Gosh dang, fucking, what's his name? The Silver Fox. Worst tipper of all time. Shit. Anderson Cooper.
Yeah.
I think I might have talked about it before. Doesn't tip daily.
Are you using my story? Okay. I wasn't sure if this was verified from other sources. Yeah.
No, but tell the story. And fuck Anderson Cooper. That sucks. You're one of the most recognizable people in the world.
Yeah.
And you go to this coffee shop every day?
You're asking me a question. Yeah, it was a oatmeal shop owned by a very nice lady in the West Village in New York, and I became friends with the guy behind the counter. He was like trying to be an actor, and he was just the best. He was this sweet. Everybody who worked there was a gem. And it was super small, like two people could fit inside. And I was in there with Anderson Cooper. And after Anderson Cooper left, I was like, hey, that's crazy. That's Anderson Cooper. And my bud behind the counter is like, yeah, he's in here almost every day and he never tips. And I always tip those guys like $5 and I had no money. So I just couldn't, you know.
Fathom. He's a Vanderbilt. Anderson Cooper is not just Anderson Cooper. He's a Vanderbilt, which is like, that's a Rockefeller on top of a fucking, I don't know, Monopoly man.
Yeah.
Fuck that dude.
Yeah.
So if you have any stories like that, email in and we'll let you know. And if you see Anderson Cooper on the street, I mean, first of all, I'll be like, hey, you know, great job with the news. But second of all, you better start tipping the oatmeal man. You tip the oatmeal man. Okay. Yeah. You got the scratch.
Or if there's any good tipper stories.
Oh yeah, we've done those too. It's a lot of athletes. Athletes tip really well, which is it makes sense because anybody who comes from not money, which is like a lot of athletes.
Yeah.
They're like, hey, I got money, and I get what it's like to work here. Here you go.
Yeah.
Shout out to athletes. Shout down to Vanderbilts. Okay. So Cord comes back. He explains. He goes, we didn't really need money because you're only paying $165 a month. And we didn't really care about our job beyond hanging out for most of college. He said, so we were all servers at a chain steakhouse, albeit a Outback, freaking Texas Roadhouse, one of these places, which, by the way, love them both. Bloomin' Onion, incredible. Texas Roadhouse, super fun. I think you could throw your peanuts on the floor. I love it. He said, we played this very dumb game all the time where we would snatch the paper from someone who just took an order and they had to let us ring it in. So that means someone takes an order and you write down their order and then one of your shit bird friends rolls over. He grabs it out of your hands and he says, this is my order now. And then he rings it in. This is awful to whoever is there eating.
Yeah.
This sucks. This would not happen in Sioux City, Iowa.
Quadruple the salt, add some mustard.
Yeah, this isn't happening because they care there, and this is their jobs. These kids working at fucking Times Square fucking Outback Steakhouse. They're paying $135 a month. Their friends are selling drugs to famous people. They're not playing around.
Well, in Iowa City, too, it's probably like somebody's uncle's going to tell your mom.
That's just it.
That you were hungover at work. You know, you can't get away with
them. You can't get the
anonymity is not
the manager of an Omaha, Nebraska fucking, I don't know, I can't even think of another steakhouse. What's another steakhouse?
I have no idea.
Yeah, I can only think of two. This is the manager of a TGI Fridays in Omaha, Nebraska needs that job because they have three kids.
Yep.
So they're not going to let this shit go down. Right. The manager of the Times Square fucking Ruby Tuesdays. Oh, hey, have fun. You know, hey, guys.
He's like, we had 6,000 people come through here today.
Yeah. And these people don't live here.
Yeah.
So either way, Cord. Cord explains, we did this all the time and it was never 100% right. Meaning you just ruined a lot of people's dinners, and that's fine. But that's why people don't respect chain restaurants outside of big cities.
I would say for a college kid though, pretty low harm.
Oh, I love the story. I am pro not working hard. This is not this. Do this all the time, but it just had me thinking. I'm like,
so you're upset at the potential impact on chain restaurants.
It just makes me think, like, when I meet people like you, or like, oh, I'm from Southern California. Oh, I would never eat a Red Lobster. I'm like, you never ate at a real Red Lobster.
I don't know that I've ever eaten at a Red Lobster.
Yes, because
No. I did. I did in Oklahoma City.
Was it good?
I got food poisoning and I threw up out of the car.
Don't believe it. Fake news.
I was going to say you could ask my mom.
Fake news. Fake news. How?
How did I throw up?
What'd you eat? What'd you get there? Barf?
I got like a pasta dish.
That's what you get. You don't get you get crab legs or you get the fuck out. It's Red Lobster.
I get like a pasta and seafood dish. I don't know, garlic bread.
You got you're talking about the you're talking about the cheesy
like Alfredo something?
No, it's a lobster bay biscuit. That's what it's called. It's incredible. Cheddar bay biscuit is what it is. Kyle Kinane has the greatest stand-up comedy joke of all time. It's about the cheddar bay biscuit. Shout out to Red Lobster. Shout out to Cheddar Bay Biscuits. Summer was not food poisoned there. It happened somewhere else. And she's spreading misinformation. You're going to get me kicked off Spotify, Summer.
It might have been Olive Garden.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm. I can believe that. Red Lobster would never do this to you.
It was fake news. I'm sorry.
Yeah. You want me off of Spotify? You want me to cause World War IV that's going on in stand-up comedy right now? No, thank you. This is a wholesome podcast. Filled with fun stories where Cord is ruining people's dinners, and I appreciate it. But at the same time, as a person from Iowa, I want some respect on Buffalo Wild Wings. Now that I've said my manifesto, and Summer has been more than
tolerant,
I appreciate it. Let's get to this week's interview with Andy Wood, the original co-host of Probably Science, still hosts it. They've gone on to bigger and better things. They have Neil deGrasse Tyson on a lot.
Okey-doke.
Yeah, they got rid of me, and they got old NGT on, and I don't know what a lot means, maybe twice, but and he's also won a bunch of Jeopardy. So I think you're going to enjoy this interview with Andy Wood, and I hope you have a great week. Yo, welcome to this week's episode of Entry Level. It's exciting. It's been way too long. We started a podcast a long time ago called Probably Science, but he's here. He's in LA. Andy Wood.
Hello, hello. Yeah, we started that thing 10 years ago.
We just did our 10th year anniversary. Yeah.
Thank you for suggesting it. It was a good idea, and we've kept it up for some reason.
Was it my idea? It was.
I think it was yours.
So Andy is a great comic. He also won how many episodes of Jeopardy?
Four episodes. Jeopardy.
But you've been on like six or seven, right?
Six, because then I was on the fifth one I lost, and then I made it to the Tournament of Champions, which I also really like fell flat on my face in Final Jeopardy there.
You win four Jeopardies.
It's okay.
That's awesome. I remember
the coolest thing that's ever happened.
And then we'll get into what the podcast is about, but I like came over to, you live in Joshua Tree.
Yes.
You don't live there. You Explain the situation that happened.
Okay, so I bought a house in Joshua Tree the month before the pandemic, just coincidentally.
Yeah.
That I thought would just be a getaway and maybe, you know, try to make some money renting it because work can be inconsistent. And then, like, I mean, when I'm in escrow on it and friends are like, why are you buying a house in Joshua Tree? I was like, maybe I'll wait out this whole coronavirus thing in the desert. Yeah. Like, sarcastically.
No, I'm saying it was a, dumbest. It was a joke until it was literally not a joke.
And then March 13th, I moved into it. And then I've been living there 2 years in the desert going crazy alone. But also then I got on Jeopardy via a Zoom interview from the desert. You know, all the stuff was remote from out there. And
well, I remember, so me and Carl Hess roll out to go camping in Joshua Tree on Halloween. And now I raged against before, but national parks are doing all reservations, which is fucking bullshit because it's a $30 reservation. If you don't go, that's fine. Guess what? You're keeping people who are actually there from camping. It fucking sucks. Yeah. And what's exciting about camping is the spontaneity and not knowing where you're going to be. And I hate the reservation system. I understand it for some parts of the park, but other parts, they should be open. Anyway, this is a long-winded way to say we couldn't find a place to camp in the park.
Yeah.
We're like, Andy lives out here. Holy shit. We go there and you're like, I got something I can't tell anybody, but I got to tell you guys.
Oh, is that like before it aired?
It was before it aired.
I already taped it. Oh, okay.
Yeah, and you're like, I did pretty good on Jeopardy.
On Jeopardy. I'm a little less stressed about work stuff right now.
Yeah, yeah. And then I remember it was airing, and this is prime time fucking pandemic where we have nothing. And you on Jeopardy is the most exciting thing. And I got to admit, I was devastated that I knew how you did. Because like everyone was on pins and needles. How's he going to do? How's he going to do? I was like, I know he wins. I know he wins.
It was pretty fun because, yeah, I didn't tell my family either because I knew they'd have more fun. Mm-hmm. They kept trying to get me to tell them, but I'm like, I just know it'll be more fun for you to every day not know what happens.
Right.
And then they're all making guesses and texting me in the daytime. My dad started looking up these, like, there's like spoiler websites, like some dude when it first airs in like Belarus or something, the earliest time zone is, someone writes up the summary of the game.
Okay.
And I think my dad had started by the fifth day. He couldn't take the stress. And he was like spoiling it and looking it up because he'd start saying like the day that I finally lost, he was like, hey, you know, whatever happens tonight is fine. I'm like, oh, you looked up what
you
happened.
Fucking know. All right, you know what's more exciting than the jobs you had? Because we had similar jobs, that's why we started Probably Science.
Yes.
But we're at this point. How do you get on Jeopardy? How does it happen?
Okay, first you drive to Milwaukee in 1993 for the teen tournament tryout, and then you fail.
Really?
Yeah, you fall.
Well, you're from Michigan.
Yes, you drive from Ann Arbor to Milwaukee in the hopes, because you think you're a smart kid, you think you're going to get on a teen tournament. You don't get past the first round, and then you give up on your Jeopardy dreams for 26 years.
Okay.
And then you play lots of bar trivia in the meantime.
Yeah, well, we would go play trivia I would play trivia with you in the Valley a lot.
Yeah, I love bar trivia. When I go to a foreign country and I'm like bored, I'll go play fucking bar trivia alone. I did that in Australia when we were touring with the podcast. Yeah, bar trivia is my jam.
Oh man, I have a fun bar trivia story. Similar. I was in Mexico. We went to, me and Summer were in Todos Santos. Bar trivia. Summer Olympics happening. It's Olympic trivia and it's in English. I you know, when you go through weird phases, when I was like, you know, in 1996, I was 10, you know,
yeah.
I just learned everything there is to know about the Olympics.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean? It's prime time, it's age, like, loved
could be
it.
Dinosaurs, could be Olympics, whatever it is.
So I got into the Olympics and like Olympic facts.
Yeah.
And I won every fucking round. And each round was like a free beer. And Summer and I got like 8 free beers and everyone was like, yo, fuck these gringos.
Stop.
Yeah. So go on, sorry.
Oh,
you love trivia.
Love bar trivia. And I've written for some like game show adjacent things. In fact, I wrote for this show that was kind of like, if you played that app-based game, god damn it, what's it called? HQ Trivia? That was playing for a while. We had
How did that fail?
I don't know. Everyone played it.
It was awesome. It was like Wordle.
Yeah, it was the Wordle of trivia, definitely. But I did a thing kind of like that was in like 2010. I lived in Seattle and I wrote for an Xbox Live version of One Versus 100, that game show. Did you ever play that?
No.
Okay, you could play it in real, like it was the first ever, it had the world record at that point for largest, most players simultaneously playing a game show because everyone is playing for actual prizes. And if you do well, you could end up as the one that everyone else is watching. And the 100 are also real players whose avatars show up there. And like the record had like at some point 200,000 people were playing or something.
Incredible.
HQ would go on to break that record. But then I found out afterwards, like Fallon would play it back, like backstage. It was his favorite thing. And I was like, it was only 3 of us writing all the questions. So if you played One Versus 100 on Xbox Live, you definitely saw a lot of my questions. So I love trivia. I wrote it a lot. Bar trivia. then Trebek had his cancer diagnosis in 2019. And I was like, I was guessing he was going to retire soon. Like, that's, you know, pancreatic cancer, that's pretty serious. So I was like, fuck, I got to get on before he retires. And so I just started doing the online test. And I think I took it twice. And then the last being like January or February 2010. And then COVID hits. And I was like, well, they're not going to fucking, this will be the last thing
they're going to do.
Tape
pancreatic cancer during
in the pandemic. Yeah. So I was like, it's not going to happen. And then April, I got a call and did the Zoom interview. And I was like, well, this is kind of fun. At least I can say I got to do this part of it. There's no way they're actually going to start shooting it. And then in August, they're like, hey, can you be here in 2 weeks? I was like, what? No, I want time to go study all my rivers. And 2 weeks, I got to go cram now. I don't even know my president's in order. So I just started like hardcore cramming and like watching, torrenting episodes to watch, looking at the Jeopardy archive where this fan has like put together every game that's ever been aired. You can play it on the site. There's like 400,000 questions they put in there. So yeah, just like super hardcore cramming, and then had this fucking bizarre taping experience because it's COVID.
Did any of the, and then I want to go back to, did any of the last second crams pay off?
Oh yeah, the night before I was playing like, because James Holzhauer said the way to do it is to study kids' things, like kids' books, kids' almanacs, because most of the shit isn't like deep knowledge. It's just like surface level. You don't have to read a classic novel. You just have to know like, three things about it.
Like right now I'm learning about Teddy Roosevelt going down the river of blank, which is like you...
don't know it.
Oh, but I'm just saying, it's like the thing I'm doing now. It's the river of doubt is what he went down. And it's like, you don't need to know what happened on the river of doubt. Yeah. It's just like, what is the thing he...
Yeah.
Basically this.
Don't read the Rime of the Ancient Mariner. Just know it's... They kill an albatross. They have that water everywhere line, and it's written by Coleridge. Like, those are the three things you have to know. That's all. So stuff like that. But the night before, I was doing maps, like kids' maps. There was this like website called like Owl and Pussycat or something. It's like to teach kids geography, and you can drag and drop countries into give you like an empty continent, and you drag the countries into place or drag the capitals, whatever. And like, I was really trying to get Africa down, but Africa's hard. There's like 50 countries.
Africa is so hard. Like, I really like cartography. I mean, I love maps. There's maps everywhere. And I would say I'm in the top 90% of people who know countries. And I could guess 10% of Africa.
Yeah. I mean, literally, I think it's 50 countries, and there's only about 200 in the world. I should know that number. I don't know that number. Anyway, so I was like, well, the Americas, there aren't that many. I could definitely get the Americas down. So I was playing around with, I was making sure I knew Central and South America.
Yeah, you can mess Uruguay and Paraguay around pretty quick. Yeah,
I'm pretty sure I know those and the capitals. Asuncion is one of the, whatever. Anyway, so the night before, I'm dragging and dropping Central America. And then the next day, one of the games, because they taped all five, they taped five episodes a day. So I was in all, my whole week was one day.
Okay.
But Central America came up as a category. I'm like, oh, I'm going straight for 1,000. And I know it's going to be Tegucigalpa because it's just such a fun name, fun city.
What
name.
Is that? Is that
capital,
the capital
of Honduras? Yeah.
Incredible.
And it was like, Tegucigalpa is this country's capital. I was like, I knew it. Honduras, baby.
And wait, so you were telling me also about the clicking.
The clicking sucks. Yeah. So even Ken Jennings admits this. It's first and foremost a bad button-based video game and secondarily a trivia game.
Okay.
Because like if you've gotten to the level that you're on the show, your trivia knowledge is such that if you were playing any board alone, you'd probably be able to get like more than 85% of the questions.
Okay.
So it's not an issue of who's the... I mean, it is to some extent. Some people are great, great, but like everyone there is very good at trivia.
Yes.
So if you can't get in the buzzer though, you're screwed. And they don't tell you if you're early or late, if you're not called on. If you're early, if you buzz in before they've decided the question is over, you're locked out. But you don't know if you're locked out. So they're like, as long as you've started pushing the button, keep pressing it, because you might have been locked out, then you'll be unlocked out. And if no one else buzzes in, maybe you'll eventually get in. That's why you see people going crazy on the buzzer.
Yeah.
So all you know is you don't get called on. You don't know if you were early or late.
And
or...
that makes sense, because I've watched episodes where, you know, somebody flounders out and like, you know, they just, I can really see now, like, you're smart. You're on Jeopardy. Don't let anybody dumb on. That button could really fluster you.
Oh, yeah. And once you lose the rhythm of it, and I don't know how anybody, like there's a book about the button that some people read. I'm like, how could you, if you're not in there, you can't, there's nobody can practice it. Because it's some producer's job to decide when the question is over. And at that point, open the field to buzzing in. At that moment, they also illuminate a row of lights you can't see on the sides of the board to tell you, you can buzz in now. But there's different schools of thought on whether you should wait for that light, because human reaction times are never faster than like a quarter of a second. Mm-hmm. So if you wait to see the light, you could be a quarter of a second behind, versus if you just had the same brain as the producer and anticipated, if you could just think about how they're listening to the speech of the host and guess when they're going to say it's open, you'll be ahead of the light because you'll be right when they do it.
So
there's different schools of thought about, but do you listen or look at the light?
You figured it out pretty good.
Well, by the last day, I did not. I lost, which is weirdly to a guy that I used to work with. He was my boss on this pilot I wrote for. He just fucking nailed me. He'd been sitting in the audience for the first four games watching, and I wonder if that's helpful to learn something about the buzzer, because there were eight questions in a row that I knew and I couldn't get in, and I just... And I got the Final Jeopardy right. It was just like the buzzer killed me on that last game. But I lost to a friend of mine, which was cool.
Yeah. And then how much did you end up winning?
It was like 91,999. But then you get 2,000 for finishing in second. The last day.
So 94,000. That's not bad.
And they
bad.
Give you $5,000 for coming to the tournament and failing.
Not bad for one day.
Not bad for what? Yeah. One of my better days.
Yeah. When we popped in to be like, can we stay at your house? You go, you got it, buddies. No problemo.
My life is less stressful.
Okay,
for a little
that's
bit.
Yeah. So fun and cool and exciting and gnarly. Who hosts it now?
It's Ken Jennings right now, and they haven't officially announced him as he's still interim hosting, but it's been like a year.
What you would know? I mean, you're more into the Jeopardy world, obviously, but like, I am tangentially involved in the Jeopardy world, which is when Andy's on it, I'll watch it.
Yeah.
But even it got into my like mainstream thought when they were like, should we have LeVar Burton? Should we have Ken Jennings?
Yeah.
Should we have Mian Bálak? Nope. It's a scumbag producer.
I mean,
what the fuck was that?
Should I say whatever? So in my tournament,
guy doesn't work there anymore. You're fine to say what you want.
Okay. Well, it's not like it's very petty, but in my tournament game, I said Teton instead of Grand Teton, and that cost me like $6,000.
What was the question?
It was a picture of the Tetons National Park.
It said,
what's this national park? I was like, oh, that's Tetons. I've been there so many times. And it was too colloquial. I was like, And when he said no, you could hear me stammer.
Wait, it was that guy? You did it with that guy?
No, the host was Buzzy Cohen. But they said, if you have any questions about something, you just wonder if the right call was made, you have to mention it during the commercial break. Because if the show's over, it's over. Nothing can be. Because it was a $2,000 question.
Yeah.
I got it wrong. So I lose $2,000. And
somebody
then the guy
else
who ended up winning the whole tournament
got it
right.
Yeah, so it's a $6,000
swing, because it would have been a $4,000 difference for me.
Right.
He gets two more. So in the break, I'm like, I got to just ask, are you sure Teton doesn't work for Grand Teton? And Mike Richards came out with one of the writers to be like, no. So little karma, baby.
Looks like Andy won that one. Okay, so this is a podcast about jobs, but that was very interesting because it's a fun job.
It's a job. I got paid for it.
And the reason we started our original podcast, Probably Science, was that you, myself, and Matt Kirshen all have science backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get into that. Andy Wood, where exactly are you from and what was your first job?
I'm from Ann Arbor, Michigan. Raised there, born in Minnesota.
Raised there, but you have one of the coolest like yearbook.
Oh, my parents do. Or I do. I also do. That's right. Yeah.
No, but well, you do too, but your parents have a cooler one. Do you mind telling people who both went to your parents' high school?
If you look at my parents knew each other their whole lives, lived on the street from each other. They're the same age, same grade. So they were in the same school. And if you look in the 1963 Ann Arbor High School yearbook, you will find my parents, Bill Wood and Pam Buford. You'll also find Bob Seger and Iggy Pop.
Yes, you show me the photos. It's crazy.
It's really crazy.
Those guys both rock in
very different ways.
Very cool ways.
Yeah, Iggy.
It's not like one is dork rock and one is punk rock. Like one is punk rock, the other one is fucking rock.
Yeah, one invented punk rock
right.
and one invented Seger rock.
So cool.
But my mom, and then even weirder, so Jim Osterberg is his real name, and he is my parents' age. Seeger was 2 years ahead. But in eighth grade, my mom dated him, went to a dance with him, got a corsage from Iggy Pop.
Did she bone him?
No comment. And my dad was in student council with him. My dad beat him for student council president.
Did he sleep with him?
Maybe. But Iggy was vice president. And I'm also like, I can't picture a world where Iggy Pop aspires to be class president.
No, it totally makes sense, man. Like in a town like Ann Arbor, you just like, in if you're striving for, you know, some sort of like, hey, attention, You want to be president, you know, like maybe you don't actually want to be president, but you want attention. Iggy Pop definitely loves attention.
Yeah. He was voted sense. Most likely to succeed also in that yearbook. Iggy Pop. He
crushed it. I mean, poor Bobby S. Okay, so you're from Ann Arbor.
Yes. And I thought you were going to say also the yearbook thing that I happened to be on the swim team and water polo team with Andrew W.K.
Which we went and saw him at the Viper Room together. And it was one of the most fun shows because it was the 10-year anniversary of I Get Wet.
Oh, I didn't realize that's what it was.
It was because they played I Get Wet in its entirety. My shoes got pulled off and the bassist hit me in the face with his bass guitar because I got on stage.
That's what should happen.
And I will say it was one of the funnest fucking concerts I'd ever been to.
I never would have guessed it from back in the water polo days that this quiet kid would become. Yeah, his shows fucking rock. And that album. I mean, it's like a perfect album.
It's a perfect album.
It's amazing.
It's so fun.
I think in that last track, I heard some interview where there's like 150 different instrumental tracks that go into that song. There's like 30 different piano tracks.
Ding, ding, ding. I mean, dude.
Same chord.
Oh, man.
Wall of sound.
Fucking speaking of that era, him and Jackass went together so well. It's perfect. Like, I really put those two things go in my head. Have you seen Jackass 4 yet?
I have not. No, it just came out, right?
I saw it Friday. I went and saw it opening night. I was so excited. I loved it.
I haven't seen a movie in a theater in 2 years. I've been in the desert, dude.
Yeah, I know, but Jackass 4 is the one you start with.
Okay, I gotta do that.
So you're in Ann Arbor.
Yes.
You're a little Andy Wood. You're kicking around.
Getting interested in science and... you care about like first job or job? What's the...
First job.
Okay, well, paper route.
Okay.
Obviously, paper route.
You got a bike? You walking? You're doing it in the winter. That's the real question.
Rough. Ann Arbor, Michigan, paper route is no fun. But it was one of those things where, like, I just wanted a job, and that is the job as a kid. And then, like, in pop culture, you think it's this thing, like the video game.
Riding your bike, tossing.
It's efficient. No. Yeah. No, it's you can't ride your bike because... you have to walk up to every door and open their storm door and put it between the storm door and the door. So it's very labor intensive. And the bag itself is so heavy. I'm like 10 years old. I weigh, you know, like 80 pounds. I have no idea what I weigh. Nothing. So they drop there's a point where they drop all the papers for the day. And I'd have to make so many trips. It's not like you just put all those in your bag and do one lap. It's like, no, you load up as many as you can physically carry, go door to door, then go back to that drop point, and then... As the week progresses, they get thicker. I guess everyone knows this, right?
I don't know.
A Monday paper is thin as fuck.
Okay, yeah, because Sunday you got all these ads.
Sunday is hell. Yeah. Sunday is hell. You can fit maybe four in your bag at once or something. Yeah, it was a really dumb, inefficient, you know, I'm sure it paid nothing. But then I got to listen to my Walkman and all my real cool music.
Did you have to? Because there's two different schools of being a paper delivery kid. Did you have to collect the money yourself, or were you paid by the paper company?
Oh, no. I never had to do collections.
Okay, because collections is fucking criminal.
I'm sure, yeah.
Criminal.
You did it?
No, I never did it, but my cousin did it. And I would do it with him. Somebody was like, we got to go get the money from this guy. And you got to knock on there and be like, hey, man, you owe us $6 for the newspaper. That's fucking crazy.
So you shake.
And these guys are being like, I don't know, man. You're like, dude, I'm fucking nine.
Yeah.
Okay. So what's your first, like... Hey, I filled out a fucking application.
Bag boy probably. Actually, caddying at 13, probably had to do some paperwork. And I didn't even golf. I just also thought caddying sounded fun for some dumb reason.
Well, it does sound fun. You're outside, but you don't think about who you have to hang out with.
Yeah, it's that. And also, I didn't realize like these guys at this country club that I think cost a ton to be a member of are the cheapest... 4 hours of sweltering heat carrying this dude's like 60-pound bag, and then the base pay for that would be $12, so $3 an hour, and then they're expected to tip you about like $6 to $8, so you can walk away with maybe $20 for 4 hours of work.
It's incredible.
It's the worst.
So someone I talked in the intro about how so through this podcast I've had people email in who's good tippers and who's bad tippers, famous people.
Yeah.
And athletes are consistently the best tippers because if you don't... A lot of athletes don't come from being rich. They're, you know, so they get it.
Yeah.
Like, hey, man, I fucking flip burgers. Boom. Rich people don't fucking understand how much a tip means.
Right, right.
Oh.
Yeah,
is just, I had a real problem with fucking Anderson Cooper. He's the number one no tipper.
Oh, really? Because he's a Vanderbilt.
He's the number one no tipper.
Yeah, okay.
He's a big thumbs down.
Thanks.
I almost called this probably science. It's a big thumbs down on intro.
Did Gloria teach you those manners?
Okay, so You're doing that, then like you're a bag boy.
Get into bag boying, learn some skills about Tetrising stuff into, you know, now when I get my bags bagged, I always ask for paper. It just makes more sense. It's more, you can stack things. Like, and you plastic know falls apart.
Like, I understand, but like, I feel like I've been told two different things. First of all, the best thing for the environment is bring your own bag.
Well,
but
of course. Yeah,
clearly that's, I
should do that more.
I forget 97% of the time. What's better, bags or
I don't know about the environment. I just mean like ability.
I understand, but I've been told
things.
It used to, in my head, it used to be bad. You get paper, not plastic, but now it's like plastic, not paper. I don't know which one I'm supposed to get.
Yeah, I don't know if they actually can recycle the bag ones. I mean, the plastic ones.
But I don't know. Might make them out of plastic recyclable material now. Either way, go on. You think now you look at people when you go to the grocery store and you judge.
Well, I just see like if it's in plastic, this stuff's just falling over. It's got no structure to it. But a paper is this, you know, this rectangular prism into which you can make things stack efficiently, mm-hmm. and then. That's just my thing. But and then that summer, or the next summer, I probably started lifeguarding / doing all of the like groundskeeping at this swim club place.
That sounds like the best job you had so far.
Yeah, that was very fun. And then they would pay. So I was new and they were like, well, guess what? In the summertime, they can't leave this place open. They can't leave this place unguarded on weekend nights. So someone has to stay out here on weekend nights. And so I was like, I'm going to lose all my weekend nights in the summer and have to stay overnight to make sure no one breaks into this place. And then once I actually had to start doing it, then an older guy came and was like, hey, wink, wink, you have the coolest job because you can have whoever you want over here.
Just rage.
So we just had parties every week. All my friends would come over and we would just, and it was a really fun swim club that had like a bunch of in-ground trampolines and high dives at a time. Pieces are getting rid of their high dives for liability reasons.
This is ahead of its time.
It was so fun. It was just like...
I'm saying the in-ground trampoline is way ahead of its time.
Oh, before like Sky Zone type thing. Yeah, yeah. And it was...
Dug into the ground,
like three or four of those. They had this thing called Spaceball that was a trampoline and a game, like a basketballish game with a trampoline in a section. You have to jump up and throw through the...
Oh, I remember that.
Is that a thing they had everywhere?
Well, no, but I remember there was a place in Davenport, Iowa, that when we visited my grandparents, we'd go do it, and that was fun as fuck.
Now imagine drunk and naked at night doing it. It's super.
I don't want to. I mean, that's all right.
It's pretty fun.
I don't know if I need to be naked.
Okay.
I
mean, it's just, you know, it's whatever. It's okay. What you do when you... So that was a good gig for that reason. But then I also would usually have to, on Sunday morning, get up at 7 to let in the lap swimmers, and like, I was very hungover.
Yeah.
And one time I slept through it, and my English teacher, who was probably like 75, she just climbed the gate, walked the half mile drive up, let herself in, just started doing laps.
That's awesome.
And then she didn't like narc on me or anything. I just came up. I was like, oh, Mrs. Thompson. Oh, he's like, hi, Andy. I'm like, you're not going to. She's like, you're fine. Go sleep.
Fantastic. Yeah. Big shout out. So what led you to go into science then? Because you didn't start doing comedy till later.
No. Yeah. I didn't know comedy was a real job option. That's just, I always loved it. Like I'm sure every comic grew up watching every, you know, I came up at a certain time when Comedy Central had just formed. I was probably like 12 or 13 or I don't know.
Yeah.
Like at a perfect age to be obsessed with all
Sandler's those fucking
shows.
Knocking it out of the park. Yeah. Farley. Like, I mean,
every network has a comedy, a stand-up show, like MTV Half Hour Comedy Hour.
Yeah, and this is back in the day. I remember like MTV or VH1, one of them just played SNL reruns.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And like now, like I feel it's just The Office reruns, which I'm like, well, that's not the same. You can aspire to be on The Office, but not in the same way you can like learn and aspire to be on SNL. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that was just like so fun to see like 80s SNLs like all the time.
I loved. Oh, and I would also like sneak downstairs like every Saturday at, you know, 10 years old or whatever. My parents were like, no, you're not watching SNL. And I just like find the part of the stairs that doesn't creak and then stand right in front of the TV so the volume could be super low. They won't know that I'm watching it. So I loved that, but I was better. I was good at, you know, math and science.
Well, there's a fucking path there.
Yeah, yeah. You're not supposed to. So you're like going to college. What am I going to major in? And then everyone's like, oh, you're good at math and science. You're an engineer. I was like, I don't even know what that means, but okay, I guess I'm an engineer. So
yeah, I didn't either.
And I'm still not sure exactly how to define it. But
well, the reason I was an engineer, I didn't know where commas went. Like, I'm not even joking. I took the ACTs. I'm sure you did too.
Yeah.
And it's like the fucking English
grammar
part.
Grammar rules?
I don't know what a semicolon versus a colon is to this day.
No, you do. Come on.
I don't, dude. I don't.
Basically, when you a semicolon could sort of be replaced with a period. Just remember it that way, kind of. Usually.
I don't care.
Sort of.
Okay. Now I write scripts and dialogue, okay? And at no point, if I'm ever unsure if there should be a semicolon or a colon, I go, they don't say this.
Not worth it. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so you also, I didn't know you were an engineer.
Electrical engineer, okay. Which was arbitrary also as a choice of engineering. It was just
my least favorite engineering.
I was just in engineering school, and then the first couple of years you're taking general stuff and then trying to decide what you like. And
why'd
it's
you
more,
go? Why'd you go? And in the biz, we call it double E.
Double E. You can't spell geek without the double E.
I mean, it was the nerdiest.
It's among the nerdier engineering.
What's nerdier than electrical engineering?
I mean, maybe there was one called applied in engineering physics, and that's pretty like abstract. I mean, the smartest people I ever knew were in that.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, it's pretty dorky. But yeah, I knew it wasn't going to be civil.
Well, civil's where the cool guys went.
Probably. Yeah.
And at Iowa, yeah.
Really?
Because I was biomed, which was the doc, the pre-med kids.
Okay. Is that what you thought you were going
to
do?
That's why I was a biomedical engineer, right. Was pre-med. And I will say this, tell me if you agree. If you were to go back in time and re-get your engineering degree, I say get mechanical engineering degree.
For ease of breadth of job options? Or
yes,
what do you mean?
It will open up the most doors to you. What do you think?
Maybe. I mean, what sort of things are closed if you're electrical that are open if you're mechanical?
I guess I'm just looking at it from biomedical. So like I worked for Edwards Life Sciences, which was a heart valve company, and they would accept biomedical engineers. They would accept mechanical engineers. But then like my girlfriend worked for John Deere. They're not accepting biomedical engineers. They're just accepting mechanical engineers.
That makes sense. Yeah.
So mechanical engineers are just a broader, they're just like, hey, we have more like, you know, we can do this and this.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at it from my point of view.
It's more broad than, I get that. I think that's what Bill Nye got as a mechanical degree from the same college I went to.
You went to Cornell, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I guess I was between electrical and mechanical my sophomore year. I was trying to decide, and I think I just thought mechanical seemed a little less magical and interesting. Mm-hmm. Electrical, I still don't get any. I mean, it's like everyone makes fun of that ICP song about miracles, like fucking magnets. How do they work? It's like, no, he's right. Fucking magnets. How do they work?
No, I still, yeah.
It's magic.
Polarization
it's cool.
Ions or electrons. Who knows?
Invisible forces and shit. It's cool.
So. Let's talk about engineering college, because I don't know how many people have also gone through engineering college. Did you excel at anything? Because I thought I might be a savant at chemistry.
Oh, no, I didn't do well. Actually, I was fine at chemistry.
A thing that you were like, I got this?
What I'm good at is taking tests. Like, I'm very bad at anything practical and useful. Mm-hmm. I'm a good test taker, which is like sort of Jeopardy. You know, it sort of makes sense. So I would just like get off on being the first one to leave for like tests, prelims we call them for some reason. I don't know if that's a universal thing.
Well, and
any test that isn't a final.
These type of tests to me sound like multiple choice.
No.
Really?
Like problem set. Like,
oh, because whenever they get like, I love a multiple choice test because I'm like, okay, I can deduce. I can get it down between two.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we can guess. But when they in like late level engineering college, they're like, open book, give it your best fucking shot, idiot. And those were impossible.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You have an hour. Tell me how hot this room is going to get if this refrigerator is this. And I'm like, what?
Show your work.
What?
Yeah.
Show your work is the scariest thing in the world.
Yeah.
Show your work. No.
No. God, yeah. I did badly at, I definitely had some fucking failures. But first couple of years, I had some big successes with just like, I killed some tests. Like, they would give you back your test and show you your ranking in the class.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was always like cool if you could get a one, if you were like the top scorer. Yeah. And I had a couple of those. And I had a couple of days where also I would just be the first one to leave the test.
That's very fun.
I think one of those days I got the one and I was the first one out the door. And I was yes. But then that sounds like I'm bragging, but I will also admit that whenever the classes became practical and I would fucking shit the bed. Like,
right. No, the first 2 years of engineering college is, okay, you all think you're going to be an engineer or you're in a 400 person class of chemistry. This is gonna be a very hard test. And we're like, okay, we can do that.
Yeah.
And then when they're like, all right, now you guys are the engineers. I'm like, oh no, now we're having to apply what we're learning.
Yeah. Circuits. I can't do it. Yeah. I'm
dude, circuits is why I hate electrical engineering.
I can't do it.
I fucking hate it, dude. I still don't understand. You show me a fucking, what a circuit looks like drawn out. Jesus Christ.
That,
okay. Yeah. I got to tell you my chemistry. Why, yes, my thinking I was, no, I'm interviewing you, but yeah, I thought I was a savant, okay? Because it's the same thing. Yeah. 400 person class. I take this chemistry test. I get 28 out of 30. That's number one. Holy shit.
Nice.
I take the next class. I get like 25 out of 30. The average is like 9. I'm like, oh my God.
Jesus.
Yeah.
The average is 9?
The average is 9. Wow. This is a first year chemistry class. So it's first semester, first year. It's just kids who are in way over their heads. But I'm like, I might just be a fucking savant. Like, I was studying really hard and I was going to class. And I was like, maybe I just know chemistry. And so we had 3 midterms and a final. I stopped going to class and I didn't study for the 3rd midterm. I got fucking like 3. I got 3 out of 30. And I was like, oh my God, I'm dumb.
It's over.
And then I had to work pretty hard to like pull out of that nosedive.
Yeah, I did some dumb things. I took a class that I wasn't supposed to take for another year, like a junior level class. I was like a sophomore. I'm like, whatever, I can take quantum physics right now. Literally quantum physics or quantum mechanics. And yeah, I got the lowest score in the class for the whole semester. Like, I got a D. And one person got a lower score who never came to any class or took any test.
Right.
But the whole semester, I was like, I'm sure everyone's doing as badly as I am, right? Like, I had no friends in the class. I had no basis of, like, caring. I'm doing much worse than everyone else.
Yeah, in engineering, you barely get to take any non-engineering classes. I only got to take 4 electives my whole...
Jesus.
In 4 years, I only got to pick 4 classes that weren't engineering. And so I was like, oh, cool. There's this class called The American Frontier till like 1731.
Oh, okay.
That sounds really interesting. I love history. It was like, it was a graduate level history class. And
this is my fun class. What's happening?
Yeah. And I took my first test and it's all written. And I like it. I think I did good. I turn in, I get it back. I got that 25 out of 100. I go, oh my gosh. I wonder what the average was. 70. The average was 70. Wow. And I was like, oh my God, I'm in over my head. And I'm like doing really well in engineering at this point. I have like a fucking 3.9. And I'm like, this is going to tank my fucking GPA.
How does my elective tank my GPA?
Yeah. How is this happening? So I go in and I talk to the professor and I was like, look, man. Like, I'm a junior, and I'm like, look, dude, I got a really good thing going on in engineering, and I fucked up big time taking this class. But I'll tell you what, I like this class. I have fun in this class. I'm just not used to the style of tests that you give, which are just, here's a thing, explain right for 60 minutes straight, don't stop writing, and explain your thoughts. I'm like, I just never taken one of these, man.
Yeah.
I thought I did a good job. And to his credit, because he asked me, like, 3 questions that I should know, you know. He's like, do you know this? And I was like, yeah, that. He goes, all right, he looks like you got a 70 to me. And he just changed it to 70. Because he's like, I think you could tell that I was like, you know, I'll fuck myself, man. I fucked up.
It's real not big. Important to me, except it is important to
I
me.
I love this. What yeah. sucks is this is my favorite class. Right. And it's hurting me.
Actually lowering my GPA by taking a fun class.
It's going to decimate it.
Yeah.
Okay, so you go to Cornell. You get your electrical engineering degree.
Yep.
Then what happened?
While I was still there, I was swimming while I was there. I swam for the team for all 4 years. And then
what?
Also,
I forgot about that. Yeah. I know. I just forget about it. So you get to travel swimming, any cool,
Barbados.
Ooh.
Yeah. Every 4 years. So that every, if you stay in the program all 4 years, one of those 4 years, you'll get to have a fun trip. Like every winter you do an intense 2-week training where you're like, you know, swimming 4 hours a day. And it's always somewhere warm, but usually like Florida. And then once every 4 years, it'll be someplace cool like Barbados. Mm-hmm. And none of this shit's paid for. It's not, the whole league isn't a scholarship league. You're just doing this for fun. And it shows with the caliber of swimming. Like there's a few exceptions. Like there's a guy, Dean Ferris, who is the fastest 200 yard freestyler ever. And he went to Harvard, which is crazy anomaly because when it's not a scholarship league, like the scholarship teams are going to recruit.
Well, that happens in wrestling. Like the Ivy Leagues. Well, some of them are good if they have, maybe it's like this. So some of the Ivy Leagues like have scholarships and sometimes kids who are really good just want to go to Harvard.
Right. So that's the thing.
Yeah.
So, but you're not going to recruit if you're Cornell and there's no money on the table and the person's getting recruited by Harvard and Cornell, where are they going to go?
Yeah. Right.
So,
okay. So that's not a job.
You're swimming.
It's just an interesting Andy Wood fact.
And then there's a program in the engineering school called the co-op program where you interview with companies in the spring of your sophomore year. If a company likes you, you stay the summer after a sophomore year to take what would have been your fall classes. Then you spend the whole fall semester working for the company and then the next summer working for the company.
Okay.
So I got a job with Intel and then I went out to Folsom at age 20 and got to the like play act at adult living because they're paying you like a good livable wage.
My first internship was $16 an hour, and it was so I'd never, and they put me up for free. It was in Kansas City, and I was 20.
I think that's about what. Yeah, it was maybe
making, I played adult.
Yeah, it was fucking. I think they even gave us a rental car, so it was like very low cost of living. And you're like, I'm a grown up. I'm not even legal to drink, but yeah, living out in the Sacramento area, so it was great because I could like drive to San Francisco or Tahoe almost every weekend. Mm-hmm. And this was right around when Office Space came out, and I had a coworker who was basically the Michael Bolton character.
Yeah.
Because it's a white dude engineer named Mike Tyson, and this is also the year that Mike Tyson had just bitten off Evander Holyfield's ear.
Oh, my God.
So everyone's always like, hey, Mike Tyson. Hey.
Yeah.
And then they're also like, why don't you just go by Michael? He's like, I'm not the one who bit someone's ear off. Why do I have to change
my
name?
That's incredible. Dude, the place I worked is exactly, it was called Cerner, and it was like, it was a great company, but it was Inatech. Inatech is Office Space. And you just walk around. It's like, burp, 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 you know, like, and I was just like, oh my gosh, I will go crazy here.
Yeah. I was not good at office work. I don't even know what I did. So I had that semester and then the summer, I couldn't tell you a thing about my job duties, but that's when I bought a guitar and before we had good internet at home. So I spent all day just like downloading tablature and printing it off. It's like, it's like come home with 100 pages of guitar tablature. And I just sit in my apartment.
Yeah, I emailed myself Harry Potter and I'd read it on my fucking Microsoft Outlook.
Right. So I don't know how they. I think I had an offer for them then after both those internships, but I was like, I don't think this.
Because it's scary. I'll get stuck there. They pay well. They pay real well.
That's true. You get benefits. I could see a world where I'd stayed on like an Intel track. Yeah, I don't think it would have been very fun. But then also, so then I did that for the two semesters. Then at the end of my college experience, it was management consulting was what everyone was doing. I also didn't know what that was, but it was just like, it is the new engineering. It's like just the thing that everyone's like, oh, this is what you do. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, I'll be a consultant. And I worked for PricewaterhouseCoopers. Also don't actually remember what I did at that job besides kill time until I left that after 6 months.
Were there, we spoke about The Office earlier and the character Andy Bernard went to Cornell. Are there a lot of guys like that?
I mean, okay, first of all, if you're a comedy writer listening to this, it's hacky. Don't put Cornell as the butt of your joke about how someone sucks and they went to a safety school. It's in so many things that I love. Like, okay. I think there's a character in like Champagne Hill that's that. I think there's one in, is it Hacks? I think Jean Smart's daughter in Hacks maybe went to Cornell just to show that she's an idiot. Like, I get it. It's a safety school. It's not the best.
No, to me, it's hack because... it's like rich person hack. Do you know what I mean?
To write that,
shows that you're a rich person.
And
you think
a Harvard Mafia
and you think
writer
you think Cornell is, but for me, I'm like, I went to Iowa. And I'm like, oh, Cornell, that's a great college. Right. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'd be like, I don't know, just any sort of. Oh my gosh, you only went to that college? Like,
it's really,
fuck you.
Yeah, it's
I went
gross.
To a college,
it's
and even gross. If I didn't go to college, fuck you. Like, yeah. I just hate any elitism.
I mean, and I don't really know.
I just meant, like, are there dorks like him
who are always talking about how they went there?
That's what I meant.
I don't know those people. I mean, here, I'm going to throw a school under the bus. I find that Dartmouth is those people. But that's my own elitism. Not elitism. Right. I just, like, Dartmouth people are always talking about Dartmouth.
I have that with Duke because, dude, so when I got my job at Edwards Life Sciences, I was 21. Maybe 22, and they fly out, and we're all paid the same. We're all on the same track. It's all a talent development program or whatever. And I was I went to Iowa, and then they had guys from Duke, and then they had people from like I don't know fucking Harvard and stuff. But I was like the worst college.
Yeah,
you know, like the guy who went to the worst college, and we were like, you know, like try to be friends. For sure. It lasts like a month. You and the new batch try to be friends, and then you're like, we have nothing common. But they're like the Duke people would be like, yeah, well, you know, at Duke. And I was like, yeah, you went to Duke? That's pretty crazy because we get paid exactly the same amount. That's pretty crazy, that's right? That you went, how much money did you
how
pay?
How much was yours?
Yeah. How much did you pay for college? Yeah, dude, that's crazy because I know how much you make and that's exactly how much I make. And that's so crazy. That's really funny, isn't that? Isn't that funny?
It's a funny joke.
Yeah. I hate it when they would try to be like, yeah, well, I went to Duke. I'm like, we have the same job.
Yeah, yeah, it's, I mean.
That being said, I was fired. Okay.
Yeah.
So you go, you're doing this other bullshit. How do you end up in Portland?
Then I got laid off from, okay, was one more quick job. So I quit consulting because this is like the tail end of the dot-com boom. And I'm like, I want to see this before it's over. I know it's not going to last forever. And I'd also fallen in love with California from the Folsom thing. So yeah. I quit consulting in Boston, came out to San Francisco and worked for this company called Sapient that was like a dot-com consultancy. And that lasted 9 months until spring of 2001. Everyone remembers like 9/11 as being when markets crashed, but the markets crashed like 6 months earlier.
Okay.
So spring 2001, everything fucking goes away. All my friends are unemployed. After everybody who had moved out to San Francisco, it was like English majors making six figures. It was the craziest fucking bubble of every, like, bodies. Companies just need bodies. Like, if you just have a dot-com, you are a huge thing and everyone thinks your company's going to be huge and they fucking hired up and then it all fell apart. So then my only two job prospects, and then so I spent all summer looking for work. There was no jobs. Then 9/11 happened. I'm like, oh, jobs aren't going to even start. Like, things aren't getting better. I got to just find some job. And my two options were either go back to Boston to work for Raytheon on a missile defense system that was in violation of the anti-ballistic missile treaty.
Incredible.
So I could have been.
Well, you could really, you know, post 9/11, there weren't really violations when it came to the U.S. doing things.
But I was like,
I mean, there were violations. We just weren't calling them out.
Yeah. So I was like, I could do that. I don't think I would enjoy that very much. I'm sorry. One more job I had when I was 12, babysitting all the time, which is important. So the other job prospect I had was the guy who I babysat his kids had started a tech company that makes, where's that projector you have here?
Oh, it's right over there.
Yeah, I'm sure it has a chip from Pixelworks in it.
Okay.
So this guy had started this company in Portland called Pixelworks that made chips that go into projectors and TVs. And I was like, okay, I can make TVs or I can make fucking things that violate international treaties and have to be like government cleared and live in Boston. And I was like, I'll move to Portland. I know nobody, but there's a job that's interesting. And then worked there for 4 years and was like super lucky to be there in this time when I was like free because they hired like, you know, unmarried people out of school because they would just like send you around the world. So I got to or had to go to Korea, Taiwan, China, Japan to work, you know, go to Osaka to, I thought Epson or Sanyo is in Osaka, go in person to these places to help them make their projectors and stuff. And that's also when I started doing stand-up towards the tail end of the 4 years.
And why did you start doing stand-up?
Because Mitch Hedberg died.
Okay.
Like the next day I went out to open mic night.
Yeah,
I love Mitch Hedberg.
I mean, me too.
And I'd been thinking about doing stand-up. I'd even like written some stuff, but I was like, I'm never gonna do it. And then he just dies. And I was like, oh fuck, life's short. You don't never know what's gonna happen.
Well, life's short if you fucking shoot heroin in your chest.
Still, it was just like.
I know he's my favorite. Two people. I've said this before. Two people dying who I did not know affected my life. Mitch Hedberg and Rowdy Roddy Piper. I'm not even joking. This is not a joke. When Rowdy Roddy Piper died, I was really bummed because I love It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, and I thought he was coming. He's just so good at acting and so funny, and I was really excited. And then like he's gone. I was like, no way, he rocks. And Hedberg. So that's Hedberg. Crazy. And it's also like serendipitous or you know, it is lucky that you started in such a great scene to begin.
I mean, it wasn't a big scene. It was a pretty like.
But I'm saying. Yeah. It wasn't big, but it got good.
It got good, and it was fun to be in a low stakes environment where it was just a bunch of people who loved doing it. And like, I can't imagine starting in LA or something. You know, like,
no.
I'm glad I didn't have to do that. But it was like very not a comedy town. Like, not to. It had one club, which was a pretty shitty. Can I trash Harvey's? Whatever. Yeah, it has like a you know a sort of C level room called Harvey's, and everything else was just open mics where there's no audience who wants to be there. It's people who wanted to play pool and they're being interrupted by stand up.
Yeah.
But then I met some great people who were either from there or lived there, like Matt Bronger. I met through this comedy message board, a special thing.
I remember AST.
AST.
When I lived in Iowa, I'd look at AST and see who was on the What's Up Tiger Lily lineups and be like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, I'd be super jealous of those living in Portland. And I even flew down for some of those shows to LA. Like, I flew down for some of those all night UCB shows in 2005 and 6.
Yeah.
So, hardcore dork for comedy. And so, Matt Bronger, who's from Portland but lived in LA, he was posting about how he's coming back to Portland to do a show. And I just messaged him through a special thing. I was like, can I open for you? And we became buddies, and then over the course of a few of those shows, started talking about how it's like we should have some little thing up here, have a night, like bring up like you know four or five comics from LA.
Yeah, because LA to Portland is a pretty cheap flight.
Easy flight, and people like being in. I mean, Portland in the 2000s was fun as fuck. I mean, it still is. Like, very, very fun city for tons of reasons. Like, outdoorsy stuff, the food scene, the nightlife, the bars, like, music scene. Yeah. Anyway, so we were like, yeah, this is an easy sell to get comics who already want to come to this town. Mm-hmm. And then as he started asking around, suddenly it went from, like, four or five to, like, there's 40 people who want to come do this. It was like, I guess we're doing a festival.
Which became Bridgetown Comedy Festival.
Bridgetown Comedy Festival, which ran for 10 years and, like, completely changed my life.
Changed, like, I mean, I was doing, didn't, it made me better. I met a lot of great comics there. I'm not going to say Bridgetown changed my life, but Bridgetown was the first comedy festival I ever did.
Oh, cool.
And it made me feel very excited. They would do the, I probably did, like, the third or fourth Bridgetown. I don't know.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But you would, you know, you had to, like, submit, and then you would, hey, you're on it. And it would be like, by the time I did like 100 comics, and then you would go and you would look at all the comics. I remember sitting at my engineering job and being like, I'm on Bridgetown. And then me and Rutherford went up and we shared a hotel room. And it was so fun.
Oh, I forgot. I was trying to remember that. I was watching Dream Corp last night and I was like, did Rutherford, because Good Neighbor was going to do it maybe the first or second year. And I thought for some reason they didn't. But he just came up and did stand up.
Him and me were roommates one time.
Okay. Do you remember if like Beck and Kyle were there?
Beck and Kyle weren't there because they would have been roommates.
Yeah. Okay. But Nick was there.
But Nick was there, definitely. I remember just like being 24, first festival, getting just rocked.
Oh, yeah. Because we would get all the local breweries to sponsor us with donations of just hundreds and hundreds of cases.
Yeah. That was the first festival I ever did. And it was just like so fun. So you do 10 years of it. It becomes like probably one of the, I mean, a prototype for what the festivals are now, which now... like, honestly, are kind of conglomerates and are taken over by Ticketmaster and shit, like most of them, you know what I mean? But this was like the true DIY comedy fest.
Yeah, it's a hard business to make money in, which is why I don't do it anymore. And I don't recommend you get into it. But it was super fun because it was before, yeah, I think a lot of comics came to it and then was like, this sounds fun. I want to do one of these in my town. And some of those became great festivals, like even...
High Plains.
I was going to say High Plains. Adam Caton Holland fully admits, he's like, I like Bridgetown wanted to do it, and he did it, and it's a good one. And some other people went back to their towns and started ones that were not as good and sort of diluted the whole idea of festivals.
Well, like the problem really is like Portland is a fun, unique town.
It's easier to sell.
That's fun to hang out at, and when you're there, everybody can kind of, you know, it's the perfect size and location for a festival.
Yeah.
Because a New York festival, where are we going to see each other? Where it was too spread out. L.A.? No way,
it
dude.
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Seattle? Still a little big.
Yeah.
Portland was perfect.
Yeah, because I also wanted to make it. I hadn't even been to a comedy festival when I started this. And I was like, well, a festival should be a thing where you can walk to everything, mm-hmm. like a music festival. So yeah. Like we found venues in the same neighborhood or like turned things that weren't venues into venues for that weekend. So it's like, you know, there's going to be five or six show venues within two blocks on Hawthorne, and you can get one wristband, you can go to all the shows and bounce between them. And like,
it was so fun. I realized this is when I was like, my way to do more stage time was to do characters, and so I was like, yo, I'll do like stand up, but I'll also do Jake the Snake. Yeah. And it was so fun. Yeah. And then I did it a couple times and I had fun every time.
It's great. I mean,
like, I think I would actually say I had less fun each time because it became more of, not, it wasn't Bridgetown's fault. It was, now I'm an actual comic and I'm like,
how do I get to the next thing?
No, not, or, it was just like, I can't drink like this anymore, man.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, by the end of the weekend, like by the end of 10 years of those weekends, I was like, Jesus, if we do this again, I have to be sober for the whole festival. But
in the middle of all that, we start our podcast, Probably Science.
Yeah.
And then we'll close out on this.
Festival started in 08. And then in 2012, you and Matt, and maybe you saw Matt doing stand-up at a festival show. And
I don't know.
About his degree.
This was like, we're all on G-Chat.
Yeah.
And we're all like, you know, like podcasts are just becoming a thing. I mean, to us.
It felt like 2012 was already late to the game. Yeah. It was just funny. It's so fucking funny.
So we're like... Like my thing was, I work, you know, I like learning. I love learning and maps, but I like trivia, but like, I just thought that all of like podcasts were so dry. So I was like, okay, let's give people, and I'm sure we all came up with this. Let's give people, each of us will come up with two science stories of that week. We'll talk about them and then we'll talk and then we will read them and then we'll talk about them.
Yeah.
So when you go to work, you're like, hey, did you hear about what's going on in Jupiter right now? And then, you know, so it was just basically six facts and then we bullshit it. And it was super duper fun.
Yeah.
And then I stressed myself out and had to quit.
I forgot the exact time or reason, because it wasn't because you got SNL. It was before you got
It was like right before I got SNL, but it was like SNL. I got SNL because of my because I was so depressed that I was just like, who fucking cares?
You were just fearless on stage, and Lauren's like, this guy's got the goods.
This guy's broken. but no, I was just like, we would do it on Sunday. And
that's right, because you were still working. Of course, yeah, I forgot your job.
I'm still full-time engineering.
Yeah, yeah.
And I spent, you know, Monday through Friday, party at night, work all day, party at night, work all day, party at night, work all day. And then Saturday, party all day.
Yeah.
And then Sunday, I'm like, I got to get to Andy's. And I got to read two science facts. And luckily for probably science, you had a roommate who is infinitely funnier than all of us, Jesse Case.
Jesse Case.
So he stepped in.
He stepped in as the non-STEM dude who is also fearless and hilarious. And yeah, we kept it going. I can't believe it. Yeah, we kept it going for 10 years. There's been times when we're like, oh, should we? Is this worth? I guess. Momentum. I don't know. It's something to like.
Look, man, you're talking to a guy who's doing this, who's on, I don't know, the fourth year of this podcast.
Is it four? Congrats.
I don't know. I don't know how long, but yeah.
I mean, it's something about that you can always tell yourself, I haven't quit that thing. I haven't quit that thing.
I compared our 10th anniversary of Probably Science to the guy who's eaten a Big Mac every day for like since 1978. I'm I don't know if you should, but like, it'd be weird if you stopped.
Yeah, why would you stop now?
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, I mean, it turned into a thing. Like, it is still what you said. It's still like science news stories.
Yeah, and we got like
with friends.
You guys had like Neil deGrasse Tyson on.
Yeah,
we used to just have idiots, and now like you guys have respected scientists.
The commander of the International Space Station on. We had the guys who worked on the gravity wave detector that they didn't get the Nobel Prize, but they worked with the team that got the Nobel Prize for.
I mean, it's awesome, and it's also just like, it's cool. I like Probably Science. I like the intro. I wish
Jesse wrote that intro.
I know the intro's great. I like my intro, but I'm partial to the Probably Science intro.
Yours is very good too.
But it's great and it's still rocking.
Yep, check it out. Probably Science, wherever you find your
Listen to our 10-year anniversary, which is like for a science podcast riddled with technical difficulties.
Yeah. It's hard. I mean,
we were in four different cities.
Yeah. This is the first time I've been in person for a podcast in 2 years.
And it's so much better.
It's better, of course.
It's so much easier.
The lags you get with, it's frustrating to have to be like stepping on each other even more when you're on whatever Zoom and shit.
Mm-hmm. Well, Andy, I want to say thank you, first of all, for being my friend.
Oh, thank you.
Second of all, for starting Probably Science with me, because without you...
I think you started it, and I was glad
you
did.
No, but you learned how to do the uploading, and you got the Zoom.
Oh, right, right.
You did all the tech stuff. You did all the tech stuff in a dusty box in your backyard. And thanks for creating the festival where I made a ton of friends. You're very important in the comedy community. Also a very funny comedian who should do it more often.
I don't do it much.
But it's kind of hard right now, especially in LA. But very good at comedy. Thanks for doing the podcast. And I know that you're a loyal listener.
Of course.
And you listen every week.
Obviously.
And you're always like, Brooks, you did it again. So you obviously know that I always have my guest take us out of this episode.
And...